Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. You're ready for this, the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell and Brad Pollack are law firms Bell and Pollack. We are injury attorneys, but we bring this show to you as a community service to answer your questions and solve your legal problems on any legal subject. You can call us on any subject, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We'll be glad to answer your questions. We've been doing it for years, and we love hearing from you. Without you, the show would be nothing. So 303-713-8255. As I said, we're injury attorneys. Everyone knows that. Every Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, we have our one-hour Champions of the People injury show. It's 1 hour long. We get into the nitty-gritty. We get into the details. We give you the information that you need. You know, the whole purpose of all of our shows and all of our podcasts on injury shows is to give you information. Information is empowering. The insurance company that you're fighting on your injury claim, they have the information. They have the training. They have their own doctors. They have their own lawyers. And you need to see how you can stack up the odds to match that, to beat that. And that's why we do these shows. We do a variety of shows in the Denver metro area, surrounding communities, and the mountain areas, the Western Slope. So 303-713-8255 today at 10 o'clock. It's on 850 KOA every Saturday morning, 10 to 11. Today we're talking about finding insurance. That sounds kind of boring. What do you mean finding insurance, Gary? Brad, what do you mean? Well, finding insurance, you would not believe the stories that we have. You would not believe what happens. You've been injured. You think somebody's going to disclose to you all and nothing but all of the insurance coverages, but they don't. And sometimes it's a major fight to get the insurance coverages. That's what we cover today. How do you do it? How do you protect yourself? What are you going to do? And how do you find out this insurance when they won't tell you? And sometimes, many times, there's umbrella insurance or excess insurance. And, you know, Brad, we covered that a little bit today in our show at 10 o'clock because these excess policies or umbrella policies are hard to find.
They certainly are, and it's important to be able to find them and understand where the money's going to come from when you go get that judgment or when you have the injuries and damages and losses that are significant and you need to find money to restore an injured victim's life back to where it needs to be or get them back at least living in some kind of decent conditions, you've got to find the money. And so often we see these commercials or statements where people, you know, there was this amount of money that the person got or that amount of money. Well, it starts with finding the insurance. And it's going to get harder and harder. You know, an insurance company has recently started advertising, and I haven't seen what the details are, but it started advertising that you can select or you can tailor or you can get your insurance to the best fits you, indicating there's some kind of buffet type insurance that you're going to be able to pick and choose what you want. Well, as this insurance industry gets more and more complicated, and believe me, it's not complicated. People don't understand that, but it's very complicated. And as the insurance industry gets more and more complicated, you're going to find that you need to be able to find that insurance, and you need to find it from whatever source. Of course, you know, Gary, what we didn't talk about in those shows and what we do talk about all the time is a primary source is yourself and making sure that you have your own coverage. You know, I don't usually talk about war stories, but I just had a man who was crippled in a car crash where he was hit head on. He was in his own lane. He did absolutely nothing wrong. His brother came in to see me and wanted to see what could be done. And as we start looking through the insurance, he had a $100,000, $300,000 policy for injuries to others, but his own policy only gave him $25,000 coverage because his agent, whoever it might have been, wrote the underinsured and uninsured motorist part for only $25,000. And so for saving less than what a cup of Starbucks would cost you for a week, he ended out being left without any kind of coverage at all, only $25,000. You've got to get your own insurance.
You know, we talk about UM and UIM coverage all the time, so we're not going to repeat that right now today. We repeat that mantra all the time. But today we're talking about when you're injured by somebody else and then you're trying to settle your claim with the at-fault person's insurance company, do they tell you the truth? Do they give you all the disclosures of all the policies? they usually, what they do, many times, some of them do, but a lot of times they give you the base policy. Here's the base policy, and they don't tell you about the umbrella policies, and they don't disclose about the umbrella policies. And we cover in our show today on KOA at 10 o'clock in the morning all the ins and outs of that, what you can do, how do you protect yourself, how do you understand it, what are the laws, and how do you ultimately discover this before you have to file a lawsuit or after you have to file a lawsuit. And they usually make you file the lawsuit, and then they call you greedy, and then they won't tell you the insurance, so you file a lawsuit to figure out and discover the insurance, and all of a sudden you're called greedy. Your attorneys are called greedy. Everybody's greedy but them. But today we go through the details at 10 o'clock. Okay, so, you know, we've heard it for years in Colorado, this case of Clarence Moses L., and he contended he was wrongfully convicted, wrongfully incarcerated for, I think, 30 years. And he was accused of and convicted of rape. It's a fascinating story, and it's a fascinating legal situation. He was incarcerated. He did go to trial. The woman who claimed he raped her, she was out drinking with three people that night. She woke up on her couch, and she was being violently assaulted, sexually assaulted, and so he said it was not him. She initially identified three people she thought it might be. She couldn't get a clear identification. She thought it might be one of these three people, and his name, Clarence Moses L., wasn't even one of the names at the time. He was eventually convicted through an identification process where she said she had a dream where she could identify him as the raper and the attacker and the sexual assault person. And so in this dream, then they went to court. There was problems in the old days with the blood tests. It wasn't conclusive DNA like it is today. And you know, Brad, so then this is a fascinating legal story because he's been through the Court of Appeals. Then there's a statute in Colorado that says you can bring an action if you've been wrongfully incarcerated. So let's talk about that a second.
Sure. The statute is a little bit complicated, and it's pretty thorough as far as what kind of compensation you can get. It's CRS 13-65-103. It was passed recently in 2016, and it gives compensation for a person who has been exonerated after they've been sent to prison. I think everybody recognizes that even after a trial and after somebody's been sent to prison, they can continue to try to appeal their conviction. They can continue to try to address the conviction. I can't say quite often, but you will have instances where somebody's wrongfully convicted, and you end up putting that person in prison. And you've got to think about what it does to the life of not only the person in prison, which is the first thing you focus on, but you also focus on, for instance, if that person was paying child support, now child support's not being paid. So you've got family members and you've got other people who aren't receiving compensation. If that person was working in a household where he had families or he or she had a family and children and a spouse and can no longer contribute to the support of the family. So there are obviously many consequences that occur with a conviction and going to prison. And so, our legislature, I think, rightfully passed a statute to try and compensate people when they're wrongfully convicted.
You know, but the legal situation of Clarence Moses L. is absolutely fascinating because there was a court order at one point in time to preserve all the evidence, the rape kit, the bed sheets, all the relevant evidence. And despite the court order, the police accidentally, quote, they said, threw it out. All the evidence was thrown out, destroyed. So there was no evidence for Clarence Moses L. He filed a lawsuit and made a claim for violation of constitutional rights, lost that. But now, coming up within about a month or two, is this going to be his trial? He has sued the state of Colorado under the statute Brad just mentioned, and we're going to cover more of that later in the show. You can call us anytime at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We're here for you. Bell and Pollock, champions of the people. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Fasten your seat belt. Here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys. We bring the show to you. You can ask us a question here live on any, I mean any legal subject. It doesn't matter if it's landlord-tenant. It could be estates, neighbor problems, inheritances, constitutional problems, and constitutional issues and questions. 303-713-8255, 713-8255. We do this every week, and we're glad to answer your questions, and we'll help you solve your problems. You can give us a call anytime. Right before the break, we were talking about the case of Clarence Moses L. He was wrongfully convicted, and now he has a lawsuit against the state of Colorado. The previous attorney general has been fighting the lawsuit, didn't want to settle the lawsuit. So he finally got a DNA evidence after years in prison. He was sentenced originally to 48 years in prison, and now we're talking about 30 years here. He finally got enough money collected in prison to get some DNA testing, and with his scientific developments in that field, it didn't match, and it did match somebody else. And absolutely was fascinating was the fact that all of a sudden he got contacted by somebody that said he might have some information to help him. And the other person, this person that contacted him, said he was the one that had sex with this person, not Clarence Moses L. He was the one, but he contended it was consensual sex. And then so the DNA evidence matched this new person, and he had lived close to the victim. So now we've got DNA evidence, and now we've got a wrongful conviction. And so then Clarence Moses L. tried a lawsuit with regard to violation of constitutional rights. That didn't work. And then under the statutes, you get so much compensation per year, Brad. But I think one of the fascinating legal parts of this is the evidence was destroyed. He'd been to court 3 or 4 times. Now Clarence Moses L. is a plaintiff, a claimant against the state of Colorado for money damages.
Sure. One of the problems in that case came up with the DNA evidence because while he's raising the money for the DNA evidence and had a court order ensuring that relevant biological evidence would be preserved, He found out that the Denver police had accidentally threw out the rape kit, the bed sheets, and other physical evidence that could have exonerated him, despite the court order. So he did bring, at that point, and this is long before he was exonerated, an action trying to state that his constitutional rights had been violated. That claim was rejected by our courts, and so he was left in jail until this person, the third person, Mr. Jackson, stated that he had been drinking with this lady that night, that he was the one that committed the rape and the assault against her, and obviously it went to trial, and he was acquitted. Mr. Moses L. was acquitted based on what was considered to be a poor identification and no substantial identification. So it ended up being quite a problem that they were facing with regard to the fact that there's nothing that necessarily says Mr. Moses L. is innocent, but he has been acquitted because they couldn't prove him guilty. And you know, that's one of the things that in dealing with cases, even in traffic cases, you know, as small as a traffic case, when you're dealing in a criminal case, you have to understand that a jury does not find normally a person innocent. That what they find them is either guilty or not guilty. And there's a heck of a difference between being found not guilty versus being found being innocent. And you have to understand those thresholds. And in this case, it was a matter he was found not guilty, or he was not found guilty. And because he was not found guilty, obviously, he was entitled to be released, and the question is: does the statute even kick in at that point? Because it's not a direct exoneration.
No. The interesting legal twist on this whole thing is we've gone through the facts. Then this other person contacted him and said yes, he had consensual sex, but he did attack the woman, and so then the DNA evidence was in favor of Mr. Clarence Moses L. But the statute says to get compensation from the state of Colorado for wrongful incarceration, you have to prove, and the words are, you have to prove that you are, quote, actually innocent. And what Brad's point was just made was a good one. That's different than being found not guilty because the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. So you have to prove now, he has to prove now that he's actually innocent. And you say, well, that's just a semantical game. he was found not guilty. That no, it's different. He has the burden now to prove that he was actually innocent, and I think that's one of the grounds the state of Colorado was fighting him on and not willing to settle, and made him sue the state of Colorado for monetary compensation under the statute. So he has to prove he's actually innocent. So now I think the case is ready to go to trial. Now I think there's a new attorney general in, as I understand, and they're talking, or there's a potential to be talking for a settlement under the statute. But let's talk about the statute a second, Brad, because it provides a base amount of pay of $70,000 per year, whether you think that's enough or too much. The statute says $70,000 per year for wrongful incarceration. Yes, you can bring a lawsuit. The statute also provides some other relief, and it also provides for tuition assistance for kids, and how do you expunge the record. So let's just talk about that a minute, because this whole thing, you know, 30 years later, he was identified out of a dream that she had to begin with, and now he wants to be compensated.
Well, sure, and he has been he has been incarcerated, $70,000 per year. What people can decide and think that's too much or too little. You're talking about somebody who has been in prison for almost 30 years, or for around 30 years, and obviously there are a lot of things that occur. But you know, there's also other compensation. The award of compensation can include tuition waivers if he wants to go to school and become educated again and get into college or get into some place of higher learning. It involves compensation for child support payments that are owed because they became due. People don't realize at times when a child support order is entered that even if the person who owes the child support is incarcerated, that amount keeps clicking, and that can be compensation that is due at some point. So you can get money for that. You can get money for the reasonable attorney fees for bringing the claim itself. If a fine or penalty or court costs or restitution had to be paid, then that gets compensated back in addition to your $70,000 per year. So that you're talking about a lot of money. In this case, Clarence L. is looking for around $2 million. That may sound like a lot of money, but when you start thinking about being incarcerated for something you didn't do for 30 years on some events that are concerning, obviously in our country we have the process and the procedure by which you can be go through a criminal case, and those criminal rights attach, and our courts work very hard to protect those, as do the district attorneys. But when you have something, for instance, like when you have DNA and you raise the money for a DNA test and you work very hard to do it as a defendant, and then you find only to find out that despite a court order, bed sheets and DNA evidence has been destroyed, so you can't do your testing, that's pretty upsetting. And you know, you've got the criminal system where a man was put in prison based on a lady having a dream that this was the man who did it and her identification. So, you know.
So in the subsequent trial, all of the identification was viciously attacked. At one point in time, Clarence Moses L. even said he had an ineffective assistance of counsel. That claim was denied. But, you know, you might be thinking there were other cases in Colorado. Timothy Masters was one of them up in Fort Collins where, excuse me, it was claimed that part of the evidence was destroyed, that the district attorneys didn't produce evidence that might have an exculpatory relevant effect and benefit to the charged defendant, Mr. Masters. And I don't remember the exact settlement amount, but I think it was like $6 million. So why $6 million and why $2 million or $70,000 a year for under the statute? You get different damages if you can prove that somebody's constitutional rights have been violated. That's a whole separate cause of action. So that's the genesis of that. So you can have a statutory cause of action. That's the statute. That's the $70,000 per year plus all the other compensatory elements Brad mentioned. Also, you can have a claim for violation of your constitutional rights, civil rights, and that is a measure of damages, if you will. Mr. Clarence Moses L. tried that. Think about that a second. He said my constitutional and my civil rights were violated, and the evidence has been destroyed despite a court order. Then that case, and I'm going to dig into it further because I haven't gotten into it there, that case for the civil right violation was denied. So then that relegated him to filing a case under the statute. So this is a statutory claim that's coming up, $70,000 a year. That's different than what Masters had up in Fort Collins. And if I remember right, the two DAs that were involved in the Timothy McMasters case, I think they subsequently became judges, and it was a nightmare for the press, for the people involved. But he walked out of prison, as you know, and I think the settlement was around $6 million. So the statute is there for your benefit. You can call us anytime at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. Don't forget about the show that follows our show. That's the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry. They're very good. They cover a different subject each week, and you want to listen to them. You also can ask them questions. They have procedures. They also hold boot camps from time to time, so it's very, very nice that they do that. It's very informative. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. We now have 6 books that are published. You can get any of our books for free, right? Just download an e-copy for free, and if you want a hard copy, just call us at our law firm, Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. Brad and I have over 30 years of experience representing injured victims. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. This show, however, is for you on any legal subject, any legal question. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And, you know, Brad, we're talking about, J.D. raised the issue of double jeopardy, which is another famous situation. So basically, you know, let's think about that a second. How does double jeopardy apply? Because if a defendant goes to trial and the defendant is found not guilty at trial, with some exceptions, pretty much that's over with. That can't be tried again for the same crime. However, let's talk about what we're talking about here. Defendant goes to trial number one, then is found guilty, but then it's discovered that there was some kind of wrongful exclusion of evidence, not evidence not disclosed, some kind of procedural error, technical error, evidence destroyed. Can the DA have another trial, a new trial?
Yeah, you know, in Dewey, like in the Dewey case, you got to remember is that was one where the case was built around a bloody shirt that was found inside, I think it was Dewey's apartment, that indicated and put him in smack in the middle of the crime that he didn't commit, that they later found he didn't commit. And they used DNA technology at that time. It wasn't until years and years later that new DNA technology resulted in Dewey being released in 2012. This was for a 1994 rape and murder of a 19-year-old girl. In that kind of a situation, that's why we watch and we see how quite often people who've been convicted keep coming back. They want the evidence preserved. They want advances in technology. They want to have the stuff come about that's going to allow them to be able to reassess the evidence. I think that we have to remember in every case, it doesn't matter. Gary, we do personal injury cases, and we know, I've talked about this many times, that what an MRI shows us today as far as an injury to a person, we couldn't see years ago when MRIs weren't around, you just had x-rays. And what we can't see now, when a person says they're hurt right now from something and they're walking around with pain from a crash and they've been hurt in a crash, and we're sitting there saying they're hurt, and we have medicine saying we can't find any evidence of it, and the district and the defendants always and the insurance companies always argue, well, if you can't find any evidence of it, if it's not on a film, if it's not in some kind of radiographic evidence, then you're just faking. Well, no. It could be just that we're waiting for the advances in technology and in science to let us see inside a person's body well enough to see the injury.
Like the resolution of the MRI is completely different than the resolution of an X-ray. We faced this for a year, but that's a really good point, Brad. So you take the position years ago. Now it's come to fruition. It's a little bit different. Well, so there's no concussions. There's no traumatic brain injuries. There's no permanent injury for that because you can't see it. You can't prove it unless you have white ischemic matter on the brain. Sometimes that's positive on MRIs, but then they say it's artifact. It's old. It wasn't caused by the accident or the trauma. But the point is the same. You can't see it. So you have the criminal situation. You can be tried. There are people been tried 6, 7, 8 times for the same crime. And you say, well, that violates double jeopardy. No, it doesn't, because they were convicted every time. Then there was a problem in the conviction. Then the conviction was vacated. And then you have a brand new trial. Now, let's talk about the practical matter of it. Most district attorneys and most criminal defense attorneys will tell you, after the third trial, the third retrial, most DAs are not interested. They think anymore they're not going to do it. Sometimes when a person is convicted and found guilty, and then it's overturned for a legal reason, like evidence issues and problems, sometimes the DA doesn't even want to do it a second time. But there are cases on the books where you've been tried 6, 7, and 8 times. And after a while, you give up. That's not double jeopardy. I mean, that's a point that J.D. Brought up before.
Well, yeah, and there's a difference, because we've got to understand. And, you and I are going way back now. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is because in double jeopardy, one of the main reasons for double jeopardy was because I don't think people realize the tremendous amount of stress and strain that goes through, that happens to somebody when they go through trial. It's a heck of a punishment just having to go through trial. If you put inside that now, in this day, most times double jeopardy only applies to when the person has been acquitted. And it comes back, and most days, most people now are using public defenders. But the amount of money alone to pay for defense costs, and for a private person who's paying that, the expense is different. You know, Gary, let's get off this for a minute. We got a few minutes, and Joe is called from Colorado Springs. Joe, you have a question about an auto accident?
Yes, sir. Thank you for your answering my call. I got in an accident the other day, and I'm the one at fault. I hit a truck from behind. And I've never had an accident before, so I'm just wondering what should I expect. I already called my insurance company, and is there anything that I should be aware of with my own company?
Right. Yeah, well, you should. As a matter of fact, you want to stay on top of it and be asking that insurance company to tell you what's going on. Did they take a statement from you?
Yes.
Did they take a recorded statement from you?
I'm not sure. The first one I called, I just explained what happened, but the other lady from my insurance tried to call me, but it closed up before I could call them back.
Okay, well, here's one of the things, and Gary and I talked about this on our shows too, Joe. You have insurance, and yes. Because you have insurance, you should have some protections. Now, you want to make sure your insurance company, to the extent it can, is going to resolve your case within the limits of your insurance. And you want to make sure that insurance company is acting in good faith towards the injured person, that they're okay, acting responsibly. You might be asking them to give you regular reports, to give you information, because you want to make sure, say, hey, if I damage that person's car, let's get it taken care of. Let's get it fixed. If I've injured that person, let's make sure that person can understand what my limits are, how much money I've got in the policy, and what are you going to do to your own insurance company? How are you going to make sure that they don't cause you to be in the middle of an accident, lawsuit, and expose your personal assets and give you problems? Gary?
I'm so glad you called in, Joe, because this gives us an opportunity to explain to you and to everybody else how that works. So you say you're the one that caused the accident. So you turn it over to your insurance company. They have the duty to defend you. They're going to try to resolve it, hopefully within policy limits. Sometimes that becomes a sticking point, policy limits, how much insurance you have and how many damages and injuries there are on the other side. But the insurance company, from this point, your insurance company controls all the decisions. They control whether they're going to pay any money. They control how much money they're going to pay. They control if they're going to make the other person file a lawsuit against you. So you maintain constant contact with your insurance company, Joe, and I think you'll be okay, all right?
Joe, let us have Kevin get your number and so we can talk to you a little bit more about it, all right?
Okay, sir, thank
you. Okay, we're going to put you on hold.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Today at 10 o'clock and every Saturday at 10 o'clock from 10 to 11, we have the one-hour KOA show. It's our Champions of the People injury show. We cover Denver injury subjects each week. Our books are on our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll see you next week.